right? We're from Cork, and what's happening in Dublin? Nothing. Don't give it. They don't give a shite about it down there.
Focus on the game. Don't hide behind your cars or your tattoos or your girlfriends or your agents. Play the game.
Be careful the cat. No say the cat is in the sack when you have not the cat in the sack.
The great football, the Liam Brady's, the Ronnie Whelan's, the David O'Leary's. This is a great football and country produced players and go out and play that rubbish. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to the new Irish Examiner Soccer Podcast. Apparently there are no football podcasts out there at the moment, so we decided to get this one out to fill that gaping hole in the market. Domestic football is back tonight, and we're going to have a League of Ireland striker taking the mic for the next few weeks, but this isn't really a League of Ireland podcast as such. Instead, we just want to tell a few interesting stories from around the game. I'm Larry Ryan, but don't worry, I won't be presenting it. Instead, I'll be acting as a roadie for the main man, Graham Cummins. We've got to know Graham in the Examiner offices over the last few years. He writes a regular column for The Echo. And late last year, he finally told his story about the time he was hauled out of his bed in the early hours of the morning by officers from Britain's National Crime Agency, who wrongly accused him of spot-fixing. But Graham also struck us as a guy who had maybe fallen out of love with the game a little bit, who was maybe ready even for life after football. He was well-travelled. He's been around the game in Ireland and England and Scotland. But look, here he is. He's back playing with Waterford. He'll be in Inchicore tonight. And over the next few weeks, Graham will be taking us around the country. He'll be talking to interesting characters like his short-lived Rovers teammates, Stephen MacPhail and Joey O'Brien. And he'll catch up with a former Cork City legend that he briefly played with, George O'Callaghan. I'll be pressing record for him. But just to introduce him to you, I sat into his new hot seat earlier in the week, just for a little chat about his life in football so far. So, Graham, one more campaign in the League of Ireland for you. Probably didn't finish all that well last season at Rovers, but at least you've got a Cup winner's medal to show for it.
Yeah, it's not something that will be going on the CV. It's not something I'd really take any credit for. No, I wasn't involved in the Cup final, so it's not something I would actually say I've won. I don't have an actual medal. I spoke to Stephen Bradley, I remember, after the game, like, he was explaining why I wasn't in the squad, and he was saying you can get a medal, we'll get you one, but I don't really want one. Like, it was like I said, I kind of had a feeling that week building up to, even though the last game I played for Rovers, I'd scored in. I remember that was UCD. I didn't play in the last game against Cork City, but I played the game before that, and it was probably the best I played for Rovers. And I was like, yeah, that'll definitely get me in the Cup final squad, because after the year before, the year previous, where I was left out of the final as well. If I get to one with Waterford this year, I remember my mother-in-law was like, you should get it in your contract. You have to play in the Cup final. So, No, that morning, we hadn't named the team, which was unusual. We normally named the team the day before with Rovers, so I just had a bad feeling, and I was saying it to a couple of the lads, and they were saying, nah, you'll be in it all right. Like, and we got messages and all from our families, which was brilliant. Touch by Rovers, it was actually a great thing. Like,
oh, a little video messages.
Yeah, we had no idea it was going to happen, so it was a brilliant video, and going to the game, like, I was texting my wife, and I was like, I'm really up for this now. I've a good feeling, actually, now. And then got into the dressing room, everything, and still hadn't found out. Didn't know all gear hung up and everything, which makes it worse, really, like, you know. And
yeah,
like, being an older player, maybe be a younger player, you want that experience. But for he just came in, named the squad, and obviously, I was absolutely gutted myself, and Eaton Boyle was left out. But, like, being an older player, you prefer to be just, like, younger players, it's good. You get around, you get that experience. But for me, it was just a case of, didn't enjoy it whatsoever. And
did you have a little strop?
No, look, at the time I went around, and I just, good luck to everyone, because you want them to win, like, because the lads have worked so hard, like, and stuff like that. My little strop was going up to the bar and having a few drinks during the game, to be fair. Like, that was
you were entitled to those, yeah.
That was my strop, and I can even remember going on the pitch after we won, and I was embarrassed, to be fair, like, you know, and
yeah,
I remember Glenn, the assistant, was like to me when we were going up getting the trophy, he was saying go up to me and Eaton, and I didn't really want, I did, but no, it was more embarrassing for me than anything. I didn't really want to be there. You have to stay there, but like, we went that night, just sat with my family and everything, the celebrations, and I said it to the manager, look, like, when he pulled me in, I just said, I'm going to stick to myself tonight because I don't want to, I was in a bad mood, obviously, like, you're in a good mood, you're happy for the lads, but like, at the same time, you don't want to bring them down.
Yeah.
That was the way I was looking at it. You don't want to drag fellas down when they're celebrating, me going over, complaining, going, but in the squad. So I stuck to myself that night, and then the next morning, got my car and drove home, and that was it.
That was it. End of the Rovers
experience. Well, I knew I wasn't signing. The manager did explain that to me that night. He was saying he did have lads on the bench that he was thinking, well, they're here next year, like, but you're not. And he was justified, like, you know, you win a game, you can't really complain then, like, you know. Bradley, I thought he was a great guy, to be fair. He was very good to me the whole way through, and they probably didn't get the best out of me because the travelling and everything, it was probably something that didn't enjoy.
Travelling up and down, you're up and down from Cork 3-4 times a week?
Yeah, I'd go up on a Monday morning, come back down Tuesday evening, up Thursday morning to train. It was the only handy thing was I stayed with my aunt, so that kind of helped family. But no, look, I wasn't giving it everything, I don't think either, because if you want to give it everything, you stay up there for the whole duration of it. You don't travel down twice, up and down twice a week, especially at 31. But
31, look, you're an old man now, Graham. Yeah.
No, but I'll be 32.
Yeah, but the travelling in the car, whatever it is. It's not ideal.
It's a case of, like, lads, I don't know, some lads, but like, I'm married and everything, and my wife is pregnant, and you think, I just want to be home every night to see her. You know, that kind of way. And you're looking forward to just going home all the time. Waterford, no, it's grand because I'm home every night of the week. Like, you see your wife and you look forward to going home. Like, I mean, you walk to live, not live to walk. That kind of way. That's the way.
Yeah, sure. Geez, I'd still take a medal, though, Graham, no?
No, not at all.
The collection, 20 years
time.
I
think my wife is different to me. No, she'd be very like, you should take one, you deserve it, you did everything, but no.
How many minutes? You played in a couple of games along the way.
I'd say I didn't really. I came on against Bowes and I came on against Harps, but no, it's absolutely nothing to me. It would mean zilch. Like, I mean, you'd pick the medal and you'd go up and it'd only be Brad memories, really. Like, you know, that kind of way, you just I remember that, all right. You know, someone looks at it and go, you've an FA Cup winner's medal. And you go, yeah, I did, yeah. But
yeah. Did it kind of sour? I mean, I get the impression from you that you're a lad like who actually really loves football and who takes a great interest in football and knows a lot about football, watches it all the time. And yet I'm kind of get a little bit impressionary lately, like, that you're a bit down about it, or it's kind of worn you down a bit.
Yeah,
like,
it did. There's no doubt about it. I think it kind of went sour a bit for me the cup final the year previous. Haven't got man of the match in the semi-final, been told I'd be playing the whole way up, doing extra training for it, and then been left out of that final, and that hurt. That was one of the most disappointing moments of my career.
Yeah.
Not starting that final, because coming back to Cork, and it was a big thing for me, like, having all my family and everything go up and not playing that day, it did hurt. So it kind of hurt then, and it carried on to next year. Wasn't really from training in the first day. I was never in the first team, like, shape or anything, so it did hurt, and you just kind of lose a bit of it. And you did, like, and towards the end, like I said, I didn't really, it was just training for the sake of it. And I was never a big trainer, which you could probably ask any manager I've ever had. I was never going out loving life training, but I always loved matches. That was it for me. I loved playing matches, like, and I lost that a bit, and I felt this year with Waterford, like, just getting up to it. I had a few offers leading into it, and you can just dive into things, like, and I just felt I'm not going to enjoy it. I'm not going to do it just for the sake of it. And I did contemplate, will I just throw in the towel no hair with football? But then I spoke to the manager, Rennie, and really just got that vibe that I will enjoy this again. And you do go through that. Like, sometimes you need an off season as well to actually miss football.
Yeah.
Like, people don't realise the off season can be the best thing ever for a player to get away from it. And you have clubs say to me, oh, why don't you come out and train with us just to keep fit? And I'm like, no, I'm just going to stay away from it. I'm missing. And I can remember being in the same situation with when I left Rochdale. I didn't, like, I was like, oh, I still like football, but I had a month or 2 or 3 months off where I just didn't go out training or anything, and I was itching to get back. And that's the way I feel now. I was itching to get back, like, and I was really keen to impress. And like I said, I wanted to go down and I want to enjoy football. That was the big thing for me. I spoke to a couple of people about it, and I was going through the motions maybe, and I said, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to go in and just have a, like, enjoy it, have a laugh, but be serious. Obviously, I will be serious, but it's going to be like, it's like enjoyment. It's about enjoying, especially the older you get. You don't want to be going out just for the sake of going out, and just, it can be horrible, like going out training every day. If you don't enjoy it and you don't feel you can enjoy it, that was a big thing for me.
And especially as a striker, you need someone, I suppose, you need someone to believe in you as well and to kind of tell you that they want you and that you can do a job, yeah, kind of thing.
Look,
like, if you're looking over your shoulder all the time, or you're trying to be on, you know, make an impression in 15 minutes.
I'm a confidence player, like, definitely.
Yeah.
Like, my confidence, oh, it's so hard to get and so easy to lose. Like, that's the worst thing about confidence in football. And
so were you like that all your? Were you like that all your life? Yeah, playing football.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I could score, and then be high, but 20 minutes later, I might have 2 bad touches, and then it kills me. And then I've kind of learned a bit more as I've gone on that kind of way. So it is. But like I said, I think he was like, again, like, I know this is about looking back in career, but again, looking forward, I'm actually just really excited. And I haven't had that excitement for a while. It's just been a case of like I did have it when I was coming back to Cork, but it was just a case of, oh, let's sign this because this club is offering me something.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of way where, like I said, I think with Waterford, it was a case of I was waiting the whole time going, I will enjoy this, because I'd spoke to Rennie a few times before. And in fairness, he was very understanding. Like, I was close to signing before I went to Rovers, and then he was understanding with that, and I just felt, no, never. Do you know, you get that kind of vibe off a person where you go, this is the kind of person I want to deal with in life, you know, that kind of way. Like, some people you just go right off, and once I met him, like, it was,
and it's not something you were desperate to do. Like, you know, you have
no, it wasn't.
You've journalist qualifications. You've a bit of business.
And like insurance. Entrance. Now I'm starting insurance with MIG, so I've had that. And like I said, I actually was like, had a full time position with them to go if I wanted to go that kind of way, but they were very flexible as well. They said, look, if you feel like going back and playing football, then we'll walk around you. And when I met, like, I could have just done that and just said, look, I'll just call it a day with football, I don't need to go out and that. But it was just, yeah, when I met him, I said, look, I'm going to enjoy this again. Like, and it probably helps that I have something on the side now as well. I've obviously done journalism as well on the side, but it definitely helps, like, having the insurance and then the football. And it's something that I was building to. I could have stepped into earlier, like you said. So, it's just about enjoying it.
So we'll go back to the start of your spell in England. But did nobody, like, all your time in England, all the clubs you were at in England, Scotland, did nobody get you into a sports psychologist, like, to work on the confidence? Or,
do you know what, we actually had one, like, we had one at Preston. I can't remember his name, who used to come up, the manager. I'll be talking a lot about one manager in particular. Two managers there.
I think I can guess.
I'm not going to name names, but we had one guy came in. And you have to really believe in a psychologist, and some minutes they can make you feel good for 10 seconds. And then, like I said, you go out on a training pitch and then that's all forgotten about. But like, we were doing psychologist sessions, no joke, no, right? We come in after training, and if we were, like, the manager used to just have 9 to 5, right, constantly. So the therapist would be booked in from 4 to 5, but we'd still have to do a session with him. So we'd actually get like 15 kg dumbbells and start like, so the therapist would go up the top of the room, we'd all be in a circle, and then we'd be like, the manager would be doing sit-ups or like holding the dumbbell above our head, doing all exercises while your man was talking about sport, like about what it takes to be good. And you're holding this dumbbell. And
hold on a second now.
You're sweating and you're doing core session, everything. And it's like being in class then, right? So men, they say, can't do two things at once. But bloody hell, we learned it because we'd have to be doing exercise with all the weights. And like, you're holding this above your head for so long, like, and you're afraid this could drop on your face. And trying to listen to your man at the same time. And then the manager, like if you were a teacher in school, like, do you know when you switch off from reading something, you normally have your finger along the word in case the teacher goes, what word are we on? So the manager would actually call someone and say, what did he just say there? No, like, do you know, like, lads would be getting it wrong, hesitant, and you're like, I don't know, like, do you know, and you get a punishment of, right, that's another minute on this exercise, so, like... But, like...
This was a mind and body kind of session.
Yeah, like, exactly, like, but... We would have that, but like we would see him one on one sometimes, which is good. Again, like I said, like you get him for some minutes, but it was insane, like how you could actually have someone on the board and you could hear the manager like in the background. Your man be talking, saying, "Oh, everything's about like click your finger, have that special moment. If you click your finger, it reminds you." And you've the manager in the background counting core sessions, going one. It's insane, like
I can see that would be a bit distracting, all right.
Oh, yeah, it's nuts, like, I mean, like,
so the first miss sitter now and that all that, you forgot all that stuff,
of course, like, yeah, because like if you've 10,000 fans, like if you click your finger, they're a lot louder than you clicking your finger, like it's very hard, like
so you're meant to switch off the all the background noise and just zone into your own little
he used to
moment.
I remember one, to be fair to him, and he had a thing about who do you do it for? Like, put it in order. And like lads are honest, like, they'd say family, you're doing it for money. And I think the fans were actually very low on the list. And
fifth or sixth, seventh.
That, yeah. Like, and, oh, actually, no. Yeah, but like, it's weird. And then, but you can't block out the fans. Like, they're the ones that actually make you go sometimes psychologist. Because like, with social media and everything, like, you read... one good thing, but you have 100 bad things. Like, but no, I've got a better one with the therapy session we had with him. We were on pre-season, and we had to do a thing. It's your 80th birthday, and who's there to greet you? Because it was based on like, what have you achieved through your career? So I can't remember what mine was. Like, oh, it was great. You've done well. Blah blah blah. So the best is the manager. Says he goes, what was your one? He said, who's the first person to greet you at your 80th birthday? And the manager says, the Prime Minister. He's like, for what? He's like, because I won the World Cup as England manager. And he just has that, like, he had that mindset. He actually, like, he used to say, like, oh, who's your heroes, all that. And he was talking about Alex Ferguson one day, and he said, no, I'm better than him. Like, do you know that kind of way? Some people, and that's what we said about strong mentality. Like, in fairness, he had the strongest mentality I've ever seen, to think he was a better manager than Alex Ferguson. Like.
And he was making it clear to you that you were a stepping stone on his way to much bigger things there.
Well, yeah, like, yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, it was at the second season, we came back pre-season, we had a whole new squad, and we just had, like, a lot of Stevenage players came, and they had obviously worked under the manager before, and it was just a meet and greet, basically the first 4 hours of the first day of pre-season, about what are your ambitions in life and all that. And some of his players stood up and they were talking about, like, the former players who come from Stevenage, like, we're going to play for England, I'm going to captain England. And we were looking, going, this guy's going to be so good, like, and we were League One at the time, like, you know, and I'm thinking... Christ, England, like, and I'm like, this is unreal. And then obviously, like, they weren't near England, but the mindset was that, like, Richard Wright and everything they're talking about. Then he stood up, like, and talked
England,
up and,
England, yeah, keeper.
He was funny, no, because he came in on trial, which was like, manager said credit to him, he came in on trial the year before.
What age was he at that stage? The early 30s.
I don't know, but when he stood up, right? So we trained our first day of preseason. We trained from 10 to about 7 at night, 7 or 8, but all our phones, no contact with our phones. So all the girlfriends and wives were ringing each other thinking there was a big crash or something, like, because they were like, how can they be in 10 to 7? Like, but Richard Wright done, I think, 2 sessions pre-season, and he came in and he said, oh, I'm injured. He was like, I'm gone now, like, so he was injured. And then about a week later, his contract was tore up. He said he had to move closer to his family. We were thinking, oh, fair enough, like, but he was saying, I can't do this training, like, no chance. We were watching Sky Sports News the next day, it signed for Man City as the third choice keeper. Oh, like,
I remember that, yeah.
So it's like, it just goes like that. He obviously got a better money deal offer and he chose, instead of being first choice, so Preston to go there. But like, I'll always remember the day I signed, because it was my first time actually signing a professional contract. So I signed, I go to Nando's, then I go to the pub with my agent. I was like, we'll celebrate having a few drinks there. And I'd never met the manager or anything.
This was over in Preston now.
Yeah. I'd never actually met the manager. So I was like, some random phone call, like, and he rings me and he says, oh, is this Graham Cummins, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, what supplements are you on? What tablets? And I was on nothing. Like, I was like,
yeah,
I don't know. And he said, well, what makes you happy in life? And he's a major, like, winning is everything to him. Of course, I didn't say any of this. Like, so we got off on the wrong foot. I'd say I was just like, oh, look, my wife now, she wasn't at the time, she's moving over. Like, so get her happy there now, get all settled in, like, and starts going goals. Like, and yeah, that'd be good. Like, and then his mindset is winning. He's like, right. And he's like, have you, get yourself down to the training ground tomorrow, get some supplements, then go to the actual stadium, get a ball by yourself and just start playing on the pitch and start kicking goals. And I'm thinking to myself, if I go into the Peter Risdale now and say, open up the ground there so I can go in and kick things, they'll think, what is this guy on? Like, I mean,
this was Graham Westley now at this stage, the manager.
Yeah, this manager.
So he wanted you to go in there, visualise knocking it into one of the
into the net, just to get used to it. Like, because our first game got called off, and then the second one, oh, my first game was at home to Hartlepool, but I hadn't played in months. And like I said, then it was so strange after, because you know, when you go into a dressing room, manager says something for 5 minutes, and he literally just went through each player, circled everyone, an X next to any mistake you made, like, and then a tick if you done good. And he
hold on a sec, he wrote your names up on the whiteboard or whatever.
Team sheet on the board. Yeah. So he just, the goalkeeper at the time, I think, I'm not sure it was Torsten Stuckman, the actual starter. So circle him and say, like, Torsten, 6 minutes, you made a bad kick, X. And then a tick, like, and they're like, oh my God, like, and the debriefs used to be so long, like, and I couldn't get over that. And, like,
that wouldn't be great for the confidence if they were full of negative, been subbed
sometimes, like, and not coming on. You do your running after the game and you're just happy. You walk in, you see one guy is depleted. Like, I remember, like, it was lashing outside, so we come in from a run and we went in, and we actually had to just go into the shower while he talked to everyone else under the team. So we were just sitting in there soaking, going, will this ever end? Like, and I'll give you one now, right? We were playing Sheffield United in my second game. And obviously, like, the physical element in England is a totally different ball game. And he comes up to me at the start, and Sheffield United know what they did at the time. They probably still do. They turn on the heating system in their dressing room. Full blast, that you were sweating, like, in there. And he comes up and he kind of gives me a little hug around the head, and he's like, oh, so what's going to happen if someone gets you like this today? Like, we'll see how tough you are. I know you're meant to be a big striker. And I was like, oh, whatever. Next, he proper started wrestling me, like, it was nuts, like. And I was like, what is going on here? And I was like, can I wrestle him back or what? Like, this is the manager. So I did give him a bit back, like.
Yeah.
And then he left me alone, came back over and started wrestling me again. And he was calling his assistants over, and they were like, look, Gaffer, I think you need to leave him off. We've got a game in an hour there, like, and the sweat. But I think it was a test to see if I'd actually fight back.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, I've gone into meetings with him at the end of the season and he's punched me in the stomach and he just leaves it like that and he'll leave you in the room. It's all tests, like, do you know that kind of way? I know.
So he wants to kind of... He obviously wants you to respond. He wants to either break you or see what you're made of.
Yeah, oh, like, we had him... We played Bournemouth last game of the season and we were there, was it the day before? The morning of the game, and he was just like, oh, come up and show me how you're going to mark your man for corners. So I just grabbed him, like, by the side, like you do, and then he just went, well, what if he does this? This in front of everyone, threw me over onto a table, and, like, I was obviously fighting back, and I'll always remember I had a white polo, and he had a red marker, and he just started going nuts with the red marker on me. Like,
scribbling on your...
So it was all over me, but I caught him by the eye, and I actually cut his eye, like, a bit.
Yeah.
I kind of understand him now, that I just couldn't get then, that he just wanted to win so much. But, like, our preseason was horrible. Like, if people ever say to me, tough preseason, I go, no way, like, just go, like, do one of them. We used to train in the morning, we'd do a bit of football, and he used to get an army guy in, Gary Johnson. I'll always remember him because he was a boxing coach as well. And we would train in the afternoon 2 to 6. We were on the pitch one day for 4 hours. With a jerry can, like these army things.
Yeah.
So you're like, there was 4 kind of sessions, and he was trying to find like your captain, because you like captains would, we'd be jogging around the pitch, and your man would be saying back to front, all this. And if you ever once started walking, there was a punishment corner in the end where you get a big rucksack and have to just jog around. But that was a break, like, because with the jerry can just sprinting up and down the pitch, like our break kind of, our easier session, and that was like we'd put a jerry can, 2 lads. You had your ball, jerry can's about 10 yards away, so you have to hit it. And then the other guy who's resting is doing sit-ups or push-ups. And then it's like if you miss the jerry can, you're fetching your ball. Like, so that was horrible. But we did one session one day. It was the hardest session I've ever done in my life. And it was a Thursday before a game. So we went out. We did our yoga in the morning. We were just sprinting for about an hour. And he used to do 90-second runs then where it's box to box. And he'd say minimum 7.
Ooh, killers.
But, like, we'd done sprinting for ages. And then he just went, 90 seconds. So we were in the corner and lads would just go. And I can remember one fella, Paul Sachi, just literally was running. And he just fell on the floor and curled into a ball. And they were up to him. They were like, get up, like. And he was like, I can't move anymore. Like,
I can't take it.
So we went in after that and we were all in the jacuzzi. We were in bits, like, because it was an hour and a half of just running. And he said, there was a vicious rumour going around, there's 3:30 minutes, games, 11 asides in the afternoon. We were like, we can't, no way. So we did. And I couldn't believe it. And he came down after that and he says to us, my coaching staff there, they all think you're tired, that I should leave you off the gym session again. No chance. Into like do a body pump session, and he would take it. It's 1 hour, like, oh my God. And he was fit as well, like, so he could no bother. Like, I remember pre-season, he brought us like for a run the morning after game, and he did the running with us, and he's he's frightening, like, on a treadmill. He used to boast about like breaking his own treadmills, you know, that kind of way. But like,
so he walked the walk, in fairness, as well. Like, yeah.
Oh, like, but he was,
and like, with all of this, like, did you, like, you were coming over from the League of Ireland, like, was it? I mean, they say now, look, you should wait to go over a bit later and stuff. Like, what age were you? You were 24. That, so, like, you had the advantage. At least you weren't going over it at 18 or whatever. Like, were you better able to handle this? Was it a massive culture shock? Like, how were you?
No, I think it was a culture shock, because I think if you go over younger, you grow up. I wouldn't say I was growing up at 24, because I was still living at home and everything. It's when you get out of home, you start really learning about life, because everything's done for you. I mean, football then became like more of a job, because I was actually, it was providing for
yeah.
my house, everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, and, like, I always say it's ruthless over there. Like, I thought, like, lads are all friendly, but you're coming into a dressing room and they're like, who's this new fella? Who's here to take my place? That kind of way.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So that's how I would always think, yes, it's good to get experience here. It's definitely better to play a bit of League of Ireland and go over and then you're a bit more experienced because you've played men's football. It's certainly better, but it's also, it's a bit catch-22 because you go over, you know the system a lot better, you know the club a lot better straight away. And you
yeah, like, so maybe in an ideal world, you reckon maybe if you'd gone a couple of years earlier, you might have been...
Yeah, but I wasn't good enough then. I was very, like I said, once you hit 22 and stuff, you don't think you'll ever go over at that age. You know, that kind of, like, especially I was playing first division as well. Like, so.
But still though, you were banging in the goals. Like, you must have been kind of carefree enough here, like, thinking everything was,
yeah,
like, you'll always, like, find it easy enough to score.
I think you kind of start thinking the move's coming when you've agents ringing you all the time.
Yeah.
And I had it the year before I left. So I kind of had it that kind of way, and I was thinking, oh, I might get a move, and I'd trials all right. When I was at Cove, I did a trial at Sunderland, but I ended up playing centre mid when I went over there.
Who was the manager of that stage?
Roy Keane at that
was
stage.
Was it Roy? Oh,
yeah, so, like, very intimidating, like, as in, yeah. Doesn't mean to be, but I remember walking into his office, and I literally was like, you can see how, like, lads lose it.
Yeah.
Lose a game with him before you even step on the pitch because he's just so intimidating. And
did he give you the look?
No, I didn't. Like, obviously, he was trying to help me out as much as he could, like, because he's from Cork. And but he's so intimidating. I've never come across someone that I'm literally, like, in my life going, I'm actually scared of him. You know, that kind of way.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I trials with Wolves. I went to Wolves on trial. And
like, you went over as a like goal scoring striker, and they played you in midfield in the trial.
That's because that was my own fault a bit because, like, they were just stuck for numbers in a game. Like, you York Cole and stuff up front, and you think to yourself, Jesus, Andy Cole, Dwight York here, like, at Sunderland. If I'm going to come over, they're not going to sign me as a striker anyway. So I played, like, a centre mid. And I got a call back, actually. And then we played Pats in a friendly. And, of course, we were playing Keith Fahey, I think, was playing for Pats that night. And sure, like, didn't realise how good he was at that time. So my own mistake, really, but I can remember I went and trial then to Wolves and Cork. Tommy Dunn kind of arranged that, and in fairness, I didn't do well there. I stinker in the game there, but in fairness, I remember Mick McCarthy called me and he just said, I think you've done all right. I didn't think I did, and he said, I would recommend you. And I found out later, he actually, like, Preston did ring him about me, like, and he did recommend me because they said it. But
did you actually get the move to Preston in the first, like, so you'd scored, what, you'd 20 goals,
24 the year before,
that was the promotion year back to the Premier Division.
I think at the time I actually wanted to go, instead of the Wolves thing, I wanted to go to Millwall on trial because they'd been onto me a bit and my agent knew him. And he said, I think it's just about going over, ticking a box, really, here.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So I was happy with that, but...
Geez, from reading Richie Sadler's book now, you probably as well have to have missed out on the Millwall experience as well.
I can remember Tommy Dunn, who, like, get on great, but no, he was very reluctant on me going. He said, the only thing you do is, he said, I'll make a deal with you can go, but if it fails, you have to come back and sign 3 or 4 years here. And I said, but, like, you can't just do that. I'll get another chance over. Like, I wasn't going to throw all my eggs in one basket. But
yeah,
the Preston thing just came about. They put in an initial bid, I think it was something like 12,000, which I knew wasn't going to happen. But the moment that happens, I get excited because I'm thinking this is life changing. Like, you know, that kind of way. And it came about and it got to a head where it was coming closer and closer. But I had a buyout clause of £100,000. Which, Jesus, was way too much, like, bad. if my old agent, like, I'd go back and have a word with him about that again. And,
well, lads were going for next to nothing at that stage, weren't they? They were going on the cheap.
First division, I was 24, like, yeah. I mean, so I can remember it got to a head and I couldn't convince Tommy to leave me go. Like, your agent does tell you, start pushing the move a bit, like, because if you sit there happy, they'll go, this guy's just happy to stay, he'll be no.
You have to,
like, I was never going, I don't think if it hadn't worked out, it would have been a big problem, because I was speaking to, like, my wife now at the time, but I was saying to her, like, unless, like we were saying, would she move over? Because we hadn't lived together, obviously, and that was a big decision for her.
Yeah.
Because I was saying at the time, I don't think I will go if you're not going to go, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
And it came to a head where I rang Tommy and I said, I want to meet the board. I don't want you there. And he was like, fine, I'll get them all to go to you. Silverstones, I think it's called, the Clayton now. So I walked into the room and Tommy was there and I was just thinking, for fuck's sake. Like, I was like, he's obviously against me and he's like, no, I'm here to help you. And I'm like, you've been holding the move back the whole time. So in the meeting, like, you have to plead your case of why you want to go. And in fairness to Cork, they were saying, they haven't given us the money. Your seller and close, they've offered €100,000. We won 100,000 sterling, which at the rate,
it's about 27 grand, 26 grand.
Yeah. So it was nowhere and ever, like, and I said, I don't know what to do. So I put my agent, I rang my agent, who was actually Tommy's cousin. And
who was your agent then?
It was Andrew Cousins. He's like a Man City scout now and Northern Irish scout. And you think, like, being Tommy's cousin, like, they could walk this out, like, so a bit of a family feud. And it was a case of put him on loudspeaker. I had to step out of the room, I think, about 3 or 4 hours later.
You serious? They're meeting for 3 or 4 hours?
Yeah, I was just sitting outside, and I think Jonathan O'Brien came out, and he said, look, it's done. You can go home. You're finished. And so I rang my agent, and I was like, got my phone back, and he was like, I've had to get a friendly that I guarantee him a friendly to make up that money, like.
Yes. Oh, so Preston would come over?
It wasn't Preston, it was someone else. Because I think the sell-on fee or something was the big... big hopes for me. But, I say this to lads, going over for a fee is one of the worst things that can probably happen to you. Because...
Yeah.
In terms of your wages, because the club look at you as a package and they turn to me and they say, we had to buy you, so that's coming out of all your wages, so it cost me in the end of the day. And then obviously lose negotiations again, you were part-time and all this, so
your priority was kind of getting over in the first bit rather than looking after your package for the next whatever. Yeah. How long did you get? Two, three years?
Was it 2.5? I think 2.5 years. But, like I said, it was insane. Like,
but like the, as you say, massive life changing experience.
Oh, it is, like.
I mean, you probably played for the Ireland under 23s just before.
Just before, I think so. Yeah.
So like you were thinking. This
and
is
I remember one of them. I rejected a call because I had to do college exams. So like that was important to me as well. That was the good thing, getting out of the way, like getting.
Yeah. But no harm finished. To have the education behind you before you went. Yeah.
So. I do have.
So we're buzzing now. You said this is big time.
Yeah,
big
but time, like baby. I said, I wasn't physically or mentally ready for what was happening. Yeah. Some of the clashes with the manager, and like he was very, like I said, the winning mentality. And I remember watching a table tennis game of him and Neil Mellor. It was harder than a training session. None of them, like, it was ridiculous. Like, and they'd use it to boast like that. Like the manager, I can remember playing him, and we were playing darts one day. And, like, he'd lost to me, but he'd keep going till he beat me. Like, and he beat another fella, David Buchanan, and it was 8 finish. And when he left the club, he texted us, obviously, let us know, and we all wish him good luck. You know, at the end of the day, he brought us over. So you owe him a lot, and it was the same, your man, David Buchanan came from Tranmere. And he texted him, good luck, I know we, like, had our differences at some stage, blah, blah, blah. And the manager just texted him back, 8 Do you know what I mean? Even when he was gone.
That's magic. Yeah.
That's like, but like, this is a fellow who used to, I must say this now, one more thing about him, like, because I know I could talk about him all day, like about, like he used to, like night before games meetings, like, used to be so bad, a hotel away, like you think lads go rest, like, but I think one night we'd 32 set pieces that we had to look up. And everyone had their own one, and you have to go away and study them. But like that was the kind of things. But we won where we had to do a movie, so he got everyone to write a movie of the past, present, and future of Preston, like, and what tomorrow's game was going to be like. And it's just like so stuff like that.
Tomorrow's
going,
game
like,
was going to be the happy ending part.
Yeah,
of this,
he'd be
this
like,
film.
"Who's going to play you in life?" Or like I said, we used to do shooting drills, and you had to do commentary of who your hero was, and it's like, who's your hero? And I was like, oh, I'm Alan Shearer, because I was a Blackburn fan. I'd have to pass the ball wide and be like, oh, Shearer goes wide. Who's looking back post? And then, like, do you know that? And it'd, like, it'd come to him and he'd be like, who's your hero? And he's like, Graham Wesley. Like, do you know that kind of thing? He's like, Wesley getting in the box and his bravery. And I think he actually, like, once, like, the keeper spilled and he went in two-footed. But, like, with that club, I got to play with, like, some really good lads as well. Like, I remember Kevin Davis. This is...
Oh, yeah, he would have come from where? He would have come from Bolton, Odessa, yeah.
Like with Preston, I knew I was kind of, like, on the way out when the new manager came in. I tried to leave in the summer when he came in. He came in February and I had a groin injury straight away, so that didn't help. And then I tried to leave in the summer and he said to me, no, I'm unsure about you. I want to keep you. And then the more strikers come in, like, sometimes you're actually happy when you want to leave. Seeing strikers coming in, you're like, this is great news.
Yeah, exit strategy here,
so
yeah.
I can remember Kevin Davis coming in, and this might sound weird now for people, but he's a beautiful man. Like, I remember coming in after his first session, I was in a bit of awe, like, you know, I was like, Jesus, Kevin Davis, like, this is unreal, like. And I remember coming into the boys and I was saying, have you seen his skin? I was like, his skin is absolutely immaculate, like. And all the boys were like, to me, that is so weird, like. And I was like, it is though, like. And the captain, John Welch, at the time, he saved me a bit because he came in about 10 minutes after me and he was like, oh, Kevin Davis is out there. This is my bad Scouse accent. He's like, how beautiful is his skin, like. And I remember a few months later, I had to do, one of the lads here was getting, his brother was getting married, he was like, could you get Kevin Davis to do a video? I just said to Kev, oh, Kev, could I ask you for a favour? And he was like, what, Graham? I said, you want to know my moisturiser or something like that? And I was like, he's obviously heard about that.
Only like, the finest products in his Gucci watch bag, yeah?
Yeah, but do you know what, though? Like, it's strange when you're over there sometimes, the fellas who've had the best career are probably the least big-headed and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
how did you
absolutely
find?
Absolutely down to earth. Lovely guy, like, lovely guy.
So he was coming in to make sure you weren't gonna be getting too many starts there.
Yeah, so that led to me going on loan at Rochdale then.
Yeah.
Came about with Brian Barry Murphy.
Oh yeah.
Who's manager there now. He was kind of like I think he was a player coach at the time. Brian's one of the nicest guys, like, if I'd say he's a player's dream to play for, like, because he just, like, he'll put your confidence through the roof. And I said about, like, managers believing, yeah, and everything like that. He was just brilliant for me, like.
So it mightn't have been any harm if you had possibly that kind of an approach initially when you went over to England, rather.
Like, Rochdale was, like, again, that's a different environment. Then you go from Preston, like, Preston, you don't realise how good a club it is till you leave it. Like Rochdale was a great club, but you go in the training ground, they don't have their own training ground, you're training everywhere. And, like, we were eating lunch, like, you're getting a roll and you're eating it off your knees, you're pressing, you have a lovely canteen, full spread. So, like,
it was kind of
more what I was used to then. Like, Rochdale going, yeah, this is a bit like home. But, like, we had a very good team at Rochdale. Like, the manager at the time was Keith Hill. He's Bolton manager. He was brilliant manager. Brilliant. Joining training. His trainings were very tough. He joining training, it was horrendous, though, because if you're on his team, he would kill you if you gave the ball away. Like, but he was good for me as well. He could see, like, I lack confidence. He could tell that in me, and he would try to coach me. But like, I can remember two of the players there. No, we'd Scott Hogan was there when I was there. So again, like, how's the luck of the draw? Like, we play one up front, maybe two sometimes. I'm up against Scott Hogan.
Yeah,
and I, like, he was so sharp. Like, he was rapid, and then we had Jack O'Connell, who plays for Sheffield United. Now, this guy is an absolute, like, you can see why he plays in that back three. They play in overlapping.
Yeah.
I've never seen a fella like him in my life. He's a machine, like, and eats everything right, like the ultimate professional. And we train, and every day he'd go away and do his own personal training thing. We'd run, the manager would be giving out to him saying, like, stop doing extra, you're going to burn out, like, but if they talk about six pack, this fella had an eight pack. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I really enjoyed it there. Like, I mean, the dressing room was actually very split. I don't know, like, in England, they, like, the Northerners and the Southerners don't get on, like.
Yeah, yeah. So you found that clash there.
Yeah, which is, it's very weird, like, that a team then that we got promoted that year, that a team who get promoted have so much success.
So clicks like in the dressing room.
Massive clicks in that with the sudden lads.
So which group were you? I
was more Northerners. I hung around with all the lads from Liverpool. I got on very well with a lot of them. But like at that time was actually the spot fixing as well.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, so when did that happen during that loan spell?
That happened.
So you were still a Preston player and it was related to your Preston time.
Yeah, it was related to like basically that I lived in Manchester, we used to travel in and group of cars and basically, if anyone was read my piece in it, one fella got arrested at Akpo Saji months before us. We used to travel in with him, and then obviously must have been some link to that, but anyway, the police said to us it was all linked because there was another fellow, it was me, Dave Buchanan, Saji, Clark, and they were like, I was getting questions, say if I got a phone call off Saji on an April game and I got booked, or like, they were like, why are you texting after games? Like, this is nuts. Like, players shouldn't be ringing each other. Like, why is the whole team? Like, there were six of us arrested. Like, so it was.
So you just woke up, the police are banging in your door at 6 a.m.
Banged the door.
That was like, the first you'd
I honestly thought when they just said, like, I thought it was basically on betting in football. You know, you were allowed to bet then. I was like, Jesus
Christ.
You could bet on
matches.
Any other league bar your own.
Yeah.
And I thought, what the hell is going on here? And they just ransacked the house. Like, they absolutely, like, tore it apart. And, like, I can remember going, I was like, I need to use the bathroom. They were like, we're coming with you.
Right.
So, straight away, that. And they were like, make sure you don't have laces or anything in your shoes because you're taking all them.
Yeah.
So, like, when I got taken away, my wife was left there, she was bawling, crying, but they were all left for her, like, just destroying the house. And when we got to the station, got told, go into the cell, so you've no idea how long you're going to be in the cell or anything like that. And they're just saying, do you know a solicitor, or do you want one provided? So obviously I said provided. So like 3 or 4 hours later, the solicitor comes in, and then he says, oh, you can ring home, like, you get that one famous phone call, you actually do get it. Like, I didn't know if that was real or not.
Yeah.
And I rang my wife, and obviously she was bawling, crying. She had no idea what was going on. She was saying my mum and dad were flying over and everything. And I was like, look, this is a misunderstanding. It'll be all sorted. Don't worry about it. But, like, even with her, she was at home, and they were, she couldn't go to the bathroom without them coming into the bathroom with her. And you're in there, you get interviewed, you get put back in your cell. Don't know what's happening again. Back out, another interview. This is more the shorter version of it. And
so how long did you spend in there altogether?
About 12 hours. And I didn't even eat or anything, like, in them 12 hours. So you're just exhausted after, like, the questioning and all that. And then, like I said, it's like you go home and you're just on bail. And, like, Preston didn't contact me ever, like, and in fairness to Rochdale, I walked in the next day to Keith Hill, and he just said, look, what's after happening? And all the boys are having a laugh about it and a joke about it, and you just tell lads what's happened. And Keith was like to me, do you want to stay out of the squad, like, for tomorrow's game? I was like, no, because I think it makes you feel a bit guilty, like, then if you're avoiding something, like, it would have been an easier option, because I can remember, like, so anyway, I came at half time getting, like, abuse in the crowd a bit, like, you know, that kind of way. And, like, you just wonder then, like, you're just like, oh, just, this is a joke, like, how long this is going to go on for. And every day, like, I was paranoid. There was cars outside my door after that, because, like, I was just wondering all the time. You do start, I'm not even a religious person, but I was, like, praying, going, like, will this end? Like, you don't even think about your football career. You just think, like, this is going to be me going to jail, like, you know.
And it obviously made headlines back here as well.
Yeah, it did, I think.
Was
so.
It later, or did it come out straight away?
No, it came out straight away, because I think, obviously, being Irish, and then Keith Keane was an Irish player as well. Like,
two Irish lads, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. It was all like that, so.
Did you feel like that annoyed you, probably, did it? That it was, you know, that you hadn't done anything?
In terms of, like, it annoyed me in terms of no one actually spoke to me.
didn't
that it was
yeah.
just straight out there without me.
She didn't do any interviews about it. Or were you advised not to at the time? Or
I can't remember. I can't really remember.
Yeah.
I suppose you can't really talk about these kind of things till it was all cleared
That's
up.
That's true.
Like.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't like I said. What annoys you then is like your phone's taken, your laptop's taken, my wife's phone's taken.
Then
we were released from bail about 3 months later. And like I said, I didn't even find out off Preston. And like this had been like the worst thing in my life. I didn't find out off Preston. I just saw it on the internet and I said, it can't be true because I would find out surely. So I rang the other lads and they were like, yeah, like the club got on to us. It's all been sorted. I was like, Jesus Christ, like, I was so relieved. My name, I don't even know, was my name in the statement released by Preston at the time. And I was like, how can they be released and I can't? Like, and I was ringing the club and they did say, oh yeah, you were in it, all right. I'm pretty sure they didn't put my name in it. And I was just like, I couldn't believe that, you know, that kind of way. Like, I got my own solicitor where the club provided a solicitor for the lads.
Yeah.
Like at the end, it was just
so all the Preston players were cleared.
I was,
everyone
as well,
was
like,
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Everyone
we were
was
all cleared in the end,
and
like,
but they released a statement saying, blah blah, all these five Preston players have been cleared, but they left you out of that.
All of them were contracted, where I wasn't for next year. I was finished, like, I'm not sure that I'd terminate my contract even like a bit early because I was like, what's the point in just dragging this out, like that kind of way.
So you never got like an apology as such off anybody or
I think with the police you can file loads of forms, all this to get an apology, but like I said, what annoys you is your phone, everything is gone.
Yeah.
Like when you get released from bail, it wasn't the case of like you get all your stuff back straight away. It was another 8-9 months before you're getting your stuff back.
Yeah, yeah.
So at that stage it was like,
but you had to buy a new phone there.
This is useless to me, exactly. That was
and reputational damage as well.
Yeah,
like, I mean, you know, stick your name in and it's there in Google, even if you're, you know, and it probably ranks a bit lower that you were cleared of it. Like,
yeah, oh no, it's definitely no one likes it.
Yeah,
like we said, there wasn't much released in us when we were over coming on the TV, BBC News, and everything. I can remember the picture on telly, and I was like, oh, at least they have a good picture of me, nice little squad picture, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything, like, we were told our names wouldn't be released, but sure, like, it was out within a second, like, so.
Yeah. So basically, the whole thing was off the back of Preston lads texting each other on a normal kind of everyday basis, and somebody putting two
like
and two together.
Like all ties, yeah. Oh, like that's all it, and just bookings. I think I got booked 3 times in a row. Your man, Keith Keane, had about 11 bookings. Like, but we had a thing with Wesley. We had the worst disciplinary record. We actually had a thing at the end where we were getting a letter to the club. And he came in and said, your record is so bad, you're going to pay the fine.
So basically, they were linking yellow cards to conversations.
Yeah,
and trying to put together a case, and that's where it came from.
I think I got 3 in a row in one game. But even after that, like, you worry then about every yellow card you pick up. I think I went to Exeter the next year at Exeter, like, I think I got 1 or 2 yellow cards. Did you actually worry about it? Going, Jesus Christ. Like,
did that look deliberate or whatever? Yeah.
I'll always remember that yellow card I got with Exeter. It was like literally a long ball up. And it was just me and the keeper challenging. And you know, like they say, players do fake, like being hurt. Oh, he definitely did, like at this stage. The keeper went down and I heard the ref saying, I'm booking him. And I was down. So I was like, if I stay down, pretend I'm like hurt bad here, I won't get a yellow card. Doctor comes on and he's all worried and I'm like, I'm just faking it, don't worry, like, you know. But I got booked, and then you'd be literally like, is someone going to write something bad about me, like, because social media, like, because I'll always remember even my wedding, my best man brought it up, like,
he brought it up
talking about, like, tweets saying, like, always knew Graham Cummins was on the take, he couldn't be that shit for no reason, you know, that kind of way, like, and I'm like, Christ. But
did he arrange a bet on the length of the speeches as well?
But like Exeter then was just
did that sour your whole, the lack of backing from Preston a bit maybe and everything, were you getting a bit disillusioned with life at this stage?
It's a brilliant club, like, Jesus, it's an unbelievable club, like it's best club I've been at, in terms of facility, the stadium, it's incredible. But just like, I think like maybe my career didn't go well there. Obviously, if you're a better player and everything, they probably look after you more. But
yeah.
So
Exeter for Exeter for a year.
Yeah, like that was a bit. That was a different environment again. That was tough because it's a bit like the traveling to Dublin. I was traveling Exeter, Manchester. So my wife got a job in Manchester, and it was a case of I couldn't take her. She just got a full-time job and she needed to do a teaching thing. And I was traveling same kind of routine twice a week, but Exeter was 4.5 hours drive. But I really enjoyed Exeter, a totally different environment. Like Paul Tisdale, like people probably remember him like for the style, all that, most relaxed manager ever. So I went from one extreme to his was the easiest training I've ever done in my life. He didn't believe in warm-ups. It was all, like some days he'd come out, you'd have to warm up yourself. And I remember he'd be like, I don't even know what I have for training today, I'm just going to wing it. But like with Tiz, like the one standout thing for me with Exeter was we played a game and the day before we were playing 3-5-2. And the day of the game, we switched to 4-4-2, I think, but only certain lads knew. So after like 15 minutes, I still thought we were playing 3-5-2. I went back defending a set piece and I said to one of the boys, I was like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you're playing in the back three and you're out left back. And he was like, yeah, we were told, four of us got told before the game, but not to say it. Like, we got called into the office, went 4-4-2, and another lad was next to me going, what? We're playing 3-5-2, I thought. Like, and this is going on during a game. You think, like, how can this, like...
What's the thinking there?
I don't know. Maybe the surprise element if we don't know what we're going to do, what the opposition know. It must have been something like that. But, like, with Exeter, like, probably the hardest part for me was living with lads. I'd always think, oh, it'd be great living with lads. Disgusting. I lived with a fella, Christian Ribeiro, and James Hammond. Ribs is about my age. James Hammond was like 19 and I was 26, 27 at the time. He'd never lived away from home. Oh my God, he was such a slob. Like, I'm a neat freak. So I was only staying there 3 nights a week. He would never put out the bin, which would drive me mad. He never washed his plates. So me and Ribs were like similar age. Yeah. Never. So all our plates weren't washed and we were getting very annoyed with him. And we caught all our plates and put them on his bed. And he still wouldn't wash him. Like, he was a different breed. Like, so, like, that was something I found. Like, I was like, oh my God, I can't do that.
So,
like,
living with young lads soured your Exeter experience there.
It was just something
So you're traveling back to weekends, kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it was something like lower league football. Like, the journey, the traveling. To be fair, what Tiz was brilliant was if we'd a game up north, he'd leave me travel up on a Thursday. Because we'd train up north on a Friday and then I could like meet him up there and then travel to the game somewhere the next day. But he was very good for that. But like it was a weird environment. Very relaxed, like beautiful place to live, like, and everything. But it was just a year there again. And
how was the goal scoring going at this stage?
Geez, in and out. Like, I only ended up, I think, with like 7 or 8. I was kind of playing left of a tree.
Yeah.
But we played like two kind of centre forwards and then the middle guy would be really dropped off. But like, I can kind of remember the end, how it kind of came there was he went a different way. I remember shouting with a fella, Matt Oakley. He played in the Premier League and he was very good friends with Tiz.
Southampton?
Yeah, he was, yeah. Tiz and Oaks were very good friends and me and Oaks had some slagging match on a pitch one day and I was like, I think that's the end of me here, like, whatever. But I remember Tiz rang me and he said, look, I remember talking to him, because when you do, you're not in the team. I went in and I said, what's the story? Like, can I just go? Can I go on loan? And he said, let me think about it. So he came in to me and he said, look, I'm going to let you go on loan. Newport want to take you. I said, grand. There was only like 10, 11 games left. And he said, well, let me get over these few games. We've 2 games. I might use you. We've 2 games in 3 days, 4 days. So then he calls me in a day later and says, I'm actually going to start you on the Saturday. So I played, scored. And then, of course, like, he was like, all right, I can't leave you going now after that, but you're not going to be here at the end of the year.
Yeah.
But I think I started every single game after that. And you think, like, I'm all right.
You get a contract out of it.
No,
yeah.
But he just literally rang me and he said, "That's it, Graham. Like that's going to be it." Like, so my next thing was I was offered a trial at St. Johnson.
Yeah. So you had to go for trial there, did you?
Yeah. Well, ironically, I'd been out on trial years ago, and kind of was in the feeling I was going to get offered a contract, but I was like, I think the money was going to be poor, and I would have had to finish. I wouldn't have got to finish college, so I was like, I'm not doing it for that. Like, but yeah, I had to go on trial, and I signed a deal with them, and I said, look, they were coming into Europe, and the manager are coming up. They had a chance in Europe if, I think it was Falkirk and Inverness playing the cup final, and if Inverness won, St. John's would get into Europe. And I was saying, look, I'm on honeymoon. I'm going to be signing the contract here, but I'm going to be on honeymoon if you win that, or if Inverness win your back. Like, he was saying what date they're back. And I was saying to myself, oh, Jesus. Like. So I signed it. Like, it was a brilliant sign, because, like, obviously Scottish League, and then I signed it. And I can remember it was the day after my wedding, the Scottish Cup final was on, and I was thinking, if Inverness lose here, I'll get an extra 2 weeks after I come back. I can enjoy my honeymoon a bit. Otherwise, I'm straight back into it. And, like, part of me was like, yeah, I get to play in Europe. But part of me was like, well, I didn't really achieve it anyway. So,
yeah.
Do you know what? You only get one honeymoon in life. Like, but sure, like, I think Falkirk and all, Inverness went the man down and everything, and it was 1-1, and I was in the pub, and I think Falkirk, Inverness scored last minute, and part of me was like, it was bittersweet, basically, because I was like, in Europe, and part of me was like, oh, for God's sake, like, on my honeymoon, I was in Vegas, like, doing running, like, do you know what I mean? At, like, 10 in the morning. Yeah. You don't go to Vegas to go to the gym, like.
No,
I was in the gym, and then we're sure we'd all-inclusive in Mexico and everything. So that was a waste of money as well, because you're only making your money
you
up
to go handy
the
on the buffet there as well,
didn't
you?
Like, even coming back, we came back from Mexico to London and then straight to Dublin. And then St. John's were training in Belfast. So I got into Dublin, just straight to Belfast. And sure, like, they'd already done a week and a bit, and the manager was there to meet me, and he was like, look, this is your room there. I got in at like 11:30, 12 o'clock. And luckily I knew a fella, Chris Miller, from doing the journalism course. So that's handy, because you're walking down the next morning, everyone's like, who's this guy? Like, he got to miss a few, like, you're probably behind things, like, going, he got to miss a few. But
yeah,
I actually then, the thing is, I missed the European game because I got injured over there, because I'd done a double session the next day, a session, played half a game, a session, I got in too much. So I missed the bloody game and got a week off then straight away. So I was like, for God's sake, like,
no European odyssey
I could have enjoyed it. Like, it was in Armenia or something anyway, or Azerbaijan, the game, so it was a horrible flight. So, be honest, like, I was like, I'm not too fussed about missing that, like, and
overall, how was the experience there? I mean,
I loved it.
Yeah,
I absolutely loved St. John's. I love Scotland. The Scottish people are so nice, and it was the best dressing room I've ever been in. The lads, like, every day, when I say about you want to walk in, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Like, I mean, sometimes people might think the Catholic Protestant divide might be something that can linger, but
yeah,
it was unreal. Like, it was so much fun. You walk in, and the thing about us was, we weren't that talented, and we knew it, but we'd fight for each other, and it's just the importance of a good dressing room, going in and having lads. There was a fella, Brian Easton, and he would make me laugh and smile every day, and you just go, this is just amazing. And it was lads who'd all, again, like, there's not that much money in Scottish football. There's not that big a difference with some clubs in Scotland and League of Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, I think what like helped me straight away was a Zip incident. Like, probably people...
Oh, you went viral, didn't you?
Yeah, people in St. Johnson would probably remember it, that, like, oh, it was so embarrassing. Like, I'm going in, this is like, I'm still only in pre-season, and I'm going in, I'm just taking my top off, or else I'm putting it on. One of the two, anyway. And next thing, I felt like something on my eyelid, and I was like, oh my God. And I was about to rip it. And literally, like, thank God I didn't, because it was proper on my eyelid. And I was like, I was so embarrassed, though. I was like, if I rip it, like, it might be a little blood, like.
But yeah.
Oh, my God. And so I was just like, there was lads in the dressing room going, what's going on here, like? And I ran past the dressing room to the physio room. I was like, I have to go down to the physio here.
And it was your man, Chris Miller, actually, who loves social media, loves videoing things. He was like, ran down to the players' room, called all the lads, and was like, you gotta see this. Like, and I'm running into the physio room, and I'm literally like, my jumper stuck to me, and they were like, what? And they couldn't believe it.
This fella can't even dress himself.
The boys then video this. You'll probably see the video if anyone looks it up. Like, and the physio ends up cutting around the jumper, so it's only a small bit left. So I actually have to go up the hospital because they can't get it off. And I'm in the hospital, like, freaking, I look like Terry Butcher because they bandaged it all up more than me holding it.
Yeah.
And I was in getting the emergency room, getting my treatment done. The doctor was like, what the hell? Like, he came in, he was asking. And I can see all the nurses outside laughing. And I was like, look, you may as well all come in rather than just standing out there like, fucking hell, you're going to be talking about. And they were like, what's going on here? Like, we have to see this because I'm in all my St. Johnson training gear as well.
Yeah.
And the hospital's only 5 minutes away. So, like, luckily, I think the doctor got a pliers to it to get rid of it. And, like, again, like, the type of dressing you have, like... I was like, yes, I get to miss training a bit here. But the dressing you have, you walk down and the manager turns on and he's like, are you all right? And I was like, I'm fine now. And he was like, right, you can all put it up on social media now. The dope is fine, like that kind of way. Yeah. And he was like, Tommy Wright, like people probably remember him. Like, he was very good with the players. Like, he would be like that if we needed nights out, we'd nights out. Like, he had a rule, like on a Friday, we would, on a Thursday, we'd do a volleys. So like, just volley, last person to score. Would have to bring in a slab of Coke for the next day, Coca-Cola, fizzy drinks the day before a game. Mm. And like the week before, you'd do three games on a Friday, we'd have three teams, and the losing team, everyone else would pick two players. You'd pick a player each, and the players with the lowest score would have to bring in like donuts or cakes the following Friday. So you'd never pick it on like, oh, you were really bad. You'd pick it on like you'd a bad miss or someone has nice cakes. Like, so like yeah. you wouldn't think it in a professional football, fellas having a can of Coke and a donut the day before a game. But that's the type of dressing we had, like, and I can actually remember Tommy the first time, like, this is the type of guy he was. Like, I started really well with St. Johnson, and we were talking about a new contract, and this is like, you appreciate, like, sometimes you think about loyalty, like, and then you think, like, you know, some clubs can throw you to the side, but in fairness to St. Johnson, we were talking about a new contract, we were saying, oh, we'll get signed, and we played Kilmarnock, and I felt something in my hamstring 2 days beforehand, but I'd never, ever got a bad injury. I just sprinted in the Kilmarnock game and just something felt like a balloon pop, like. So I was like, oh, can I play on or not? And I wanted to play on because we had an international break coming up, and I got the chance. I was going home, like, and I was like, if I'm injured, I might be in. So I went in. I had to come off anyway, the physio. So he sees me and he was like, look, you've done your hamstring here, I'd say. And I was like, it can't be. It's grand. It'd be grand. So I went out that night. I went back to Ireland, flew back to Ireland. I remember going to the FAI Cup final, and there was this woman, she was saying she's a nurse or a physio or something. One of my mum's friends, I met my mum and dad in the bar, and she was like, you're walking away in it, you're grand. So like, I didn't think anything of it. So I'm dope, like, don't have injuries. Read up the next day what you shouldn't do with an injury. Drink alcohol that night, then to sweat it out of me. I went to the sauna the next morning, that's bad for it. And was in Dublin the next day, walking around the place, limping, drank, got a flight back on the Tuesday. Never asked the manager, could I have the days off? I just said it to the physio and he was like, grand. So the scan came in. I went into the physio and I went and got a scan, and the scan was bad. Like, it was very close to needing surgery on my hamstring, which I was shocked by. And the physio was like, manager's raging. You were missing yesterday. But I was like, yeah, but I asked you, there was nothing I could do. He's like, he is raging with you. So I knocked on the door and I was like, oh my God. And he F and blinded me out of it, saying like, do you think going back, sitting in a thing? I lied to him. I was like, I only went to Dublin. Like, I went to Dublin, I went back to Cork to go out. Like,
yeah.
And he was F and blinding me. And I was like, I'm fucked, I'm injured. I'd only 1 year contract. And I was like, he said, you're looking
at about 13, 14 weeks out here. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. He told the press three, but like, I was like, oh Jesus. And he went, and by the way, he's so effing blind me. He said, that contract, 2 years, you think he's going to pull you? He's like, we'll have that sorted as well. So you'll sign that. And I was like, whoa. I was like, do you know what I mean?
Like, he was giving you a deal.
Yeah, he was saying, like, we have the contract sorted. Yeah. Like, that's all sorted, all your money. Where so much clubs would actually go, we'll see with this guy coming back. But I think that injury, Jesus, that was, like, I was flying till then. And I never realised how much an injury can hamper you till
never
then.
Fully like,
it took me about a year after to get it fully right. Because I'd play a game on a Saturday and I'd be limping then. Till like a Wednesday, Thursday, I'd be in bits. But
I mean, while you were there, you played against Van Dijk.
Yeah, that was.
What was he like?
Oh, geez, well, I didn't think he would play because he left the day after. We played against him, we were saying he'll never go. He's going to Southampton. My claim to fame is obviously like that's what pushed Southampton over. He's, like he marked me, so like you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like
you showcased his talents there.
I think the first run was like it was more we were told in the dressing room stop him rather than him stopping you because like you're a centre forward and we're told just get behind the ball every time he gets it because he'll just run the pitch no bother and all the boys were warning me. I remember the first one he was with Boyata centre back and I at the time was thinking Boyata's not that good, I don't think he reads the game as well, like he improves so much, but I was like I enjoy playing against him and tried to sprint with Van Dijk and he just boshed me out of it like and like I was like out of breath, I was blown out of my backside and then he just turned to me and just said look I wouldn't even bother, I'm just too good, like
he said that
then,
yeah you.
And then I'm like he's so cocky but like he's so good and then but just playing against Celtic in general was horrible, like we played against him once and I was left wing and I was only coming back from the injury, but like you're just defending. And I came off at half time. I was absolutely exhausted. I was so tired. I couldn't, like, you play at Celtic Park, and when you can see the goal, you're looking up at the big screen, you're like, oh no, oh Jesus. Like, and it's just then, like, that music goes off, and you're just dreading. But I remember the manager pulled me on the, we played the Monday, or trained the Monday, because you normally wouldn't if you played over. Yeah. But my legs were gone. I couldn't get my heart rate up. And it cost me a semi-final of a League Cup because he said to me, you couldn't get your heart rate up and train. And I was like, I just can't move. And he said, well, you're not fit enough. So, and then I didn't play the semi-final of the League Cup, which was a big disappointment because we lost to Hibs and Ross County beat Celtic the next day. Like, we were thinking, sure, Celtic will win anyway, like, which makes it worse because you think I could have actually won a League Cup. And
so look, come here, we're running out of time. Like, is it? I mean, the happiest time. Do you look back on the time across as something you could have got a bit more out of? What do you look back on the happiest? I mean, you were flying. You're a Cork City legend for your earlier spell. You did well at Cove. Like, what are the big highs? And are there a few regrets?
There's loads of regrets, obviously, because you always doubt yourself and maybe play centre-back a bit more. I always think that was my best position. Who knows in the future? There's loads of regrets. I think, like, three always come to mind. I know my first goal with Preston was good, but obviously getting that winner with Cork City in the first division in the league, that was a big high. Scoring at Ibrox against Rangers was another big high. And I think it might sound so strange, my proudest moment in football was actually at St. John's when we played Dundee United. It was probably the best game I've ever played. That we got a man sent off, the keeper got sent off after about 12, 13 minutes. And it was the first time my mum and dad had come over to Scotland to watch me, and my wife was in the crowd. And we stuck with two up front, but we ran so much. I can remember I cramped up in the game and I was asking, could I come off? And they were like, we've no subs left. But I scored and I set up one. And I remember you do your talking after the game. But proudest moment for me is I walked into the dressing room. I was laid in and all the boys were, the manager was talking. All the boys stood up and just clapped me.
Nice.
And it was just like, literally, I was saying, what you just did today was unbelievable. And that was probably my proudest moment in football. And
no one ever sees that, but that for me will always stay in my mind. Actually, like, you just think back and you go, whoa, amazing. Like, because it's the comments from your fellow teammates. I always think that, you know, say if you get player of the year or something, it's players player of the year you want.
Yeah.
Like, not, I know supporters and club player of the year, but for me it means a lot because they know everything you do, what a footballer does when he's not on the ball, like, you know, that kind of way. So,
and is it frustrating that those days when everything is so perfect and so everything seems to click, that it's so elusive to kind of repeat that or to kind of capture it again or whatever?
Yeah,
is
but that's what I said. That's why I decided I want to keep going in football, because I want more of them. I feel I can get more of them.
The appetite is back for it a bit.
Yeah, it is. Like, that kind of way I look at it. Like I said, I'd miss it. Like, and that's probably the difference now between me and a few months ago, where I was thinking, I don't think I'll miss this anymore. Like, it's... Well, no.
I mean, you could easily have 5-6 years left.
I'd like to think I look after myself a bit. Like, I probably need to actually beef up a small bit. So yeah, I hopefully do have a few more years left of me. Like I said, I've got a child on the way, so I want to see that child and bring him out into the crowd. Obviously, have something like that in my mind as well. Like, yeah. So that's something I want to look back in as a prouder moment again in my career.